You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Today, I'm going to complete what I really started yesterday, because I've done a little more research, more prep. And my initial take on it, I think, has been reinforced. There is a fundamental disagreement between the Iranian government and the United States government as to the interpretation of the agreement that, as far as I hasn't been signed yet, even though they supposedly have a deal. The Iranians are saying they have a right to enrich uranium, which they do under the Nuclear Proliferation Treaty. The question, I think, is to what level? And for if you're just using it for fuel for a peaceful use to produce electricity, you really only need to enrich to as high as 5%. However, if you're trying to develop a nuclear weapon, you need to enrich to the 90% level in terms of U-235. As I went over yesterday, you have two types of uranium. The most predominant type is 238, and roughly 99.3% of all the uranium out there, it's uranium-238, and mixed in with it is uranium-235, which only makes up 0.7%. So what you have to do is use centrifugal force. You need to get out the uranium-238, and that's what they do. They use centrifuges to do that, actually a series of centrifuges. And what happens is the heavier, 238 is heavier, so it goes to the outside of the centrifuge. And in the center of the centrifuge, you have the U-235, and then there's a series of these centrifuges, and it goes from one to the other, and as that process continues, you get more and more, a higher percentage is 235, until you ultimately get it to a level of enrichment of 90%. Now, we're getting the impression that the United States is saying that they've stopped the enrichment of uranium in Iran, when Iran is very, very clear that, no, they're not going to give up the right to enrich uranium. Now, I can see where there's some wiggle room here as to what level. You see, right now, Iran has a significant quantity of uranium enriched to 20%. And that that enriched uranium is supposedly going to put in a solution. But the problem is that can quick, and that supposedly makes it, how should I say, you can't use it in the solution. But the chemically, however, you could reverse that. So it's really, how should I say this? It's smoke and mirrors, folks. You need to get rid of the 20% or instead of enrich, de-enrich to take it down back to 5% or less. So you have the whole issue of the enrichment of uranium that really needs to be finalized where you don't have this agreement. The Iranians are disagreeing with the interpretation of the treaty as posted on the White House website. And this is a fundamental, and this is key. The key issue in this whole negotiation, there are always going to be issues, but the key issue, and really the roadblock, is enrichment of uranium and to what level. Now, another issue is this. You don't necessarily need U-235 to make a nuclear weapon. You can do it with plutonium. And they have a heavy liquid reactor, or heavy water reactor is another way to say it, that is being built at some expense. These are not cheap. I believe it's with the help of the Russians. You need to understand that. For those that are new to the show, you go to pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops, pronkpops.wordpress.com. And it's a companion blog to the radio show. And what I have, I'll have at the very top are links to the last shows for the last 2 months, October, November. And below that, you have my complete archive of all the shows I've ever presented on KDUX. The show tomorrow will be the last show for November, and it probably will not be a long show. It'll probably be an hour, maybe 2 hours, but it's not going to be a special edition because most people are trying to get out of here to go on the holiday. I need to do that myself. I'm not going out of town, but I do have things that I need to do. I'm looking forward to the holiday. And so the school is not going to be open. Richland College will be closed Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And let me repeat it, the campus will be entirely closed Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Normally the labs such as Del Rio and the Multimedia Lab are open on Saturday, and on Sunday the Del Rio Lab is open. However, because this is the Thanksgiving holiday weekend, all of Richland College is shut down. And I'm telling you that because sometimes we have students that are new, and this is the first Thanksgiving, or not aware of it, and they come after the Thanksgiving holiday. You have Black Friday where people do shopping, and many of the students think they can come to campus either on Friday, Saturday, or Sunday and do schoolwork. No, you can't. The campus will be shut down, and there are signs posted all over the campus. I'm doing this as more of a public service announcement for the Richland College students as well as the faculty and staff. The faculty and staff are aware of this, but we always have students that will come to the campus during the holiday and wonder why it's shut. Well, it's shut because of the Thanksgiving holiday. You have time. You stay at home. You can catch up on your homework, do some papers. I have an article to write as well as a paper that I need to prepare, and am working on it as I speak. I'm trying to get most of it done today and tomorrow, so I'm going to be pushing it. I'll probably do it to at least half of it will be done prior to the holiday, and then during the holiday I'll complete it. Now, getting back to the Iranian situation, I'm of the firm opinion, I've thought about this, and I'm saying, why are we doing this? Why are we playing these games? Because I think it's a bad deal. Now, let me make one reservation. If you can get the Iranians to agree to dismantle nuclear reactor that they're building, okay, that's worth doing. And the last show, I had a graphic that shows and that's what I'm pulling up right now. There's a heavy water facility. It's a nuclear reactor at Arak, A-R-A-K. Now, I'm calling your attention to that because that reactor, while it can and will produce electricity, also produces plutonium. And plutonium can be used to build a nuclear bomb. So in terms of stopping nuclear proliferation of nuclear weapons, Iran would have to agree to stop enriching uranium. In other words, give up its stockpiles of 20% uranium, as well as not enrich it any further than 20%, and shut down and dismantle its heavy water facility. And again, that's the nuclear reactor is not in operation today. And I'm not clear what the Iranians will or will not do. I've been convinced, and nothing has changed my mind, is they want to build nuclear weapons. And this is really a song and dance. This is a stall. You know, diplomacy has not worked, neither have sanctions. We're dealing with a rogue regime that is set on, has its mind made up, to produce not only a nuclear weapon, and more than one, but also missiles that will enable it to attack its neighbors, including Israel, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and all those countries. What we don't want in the Middle East is a nuclear arms race. And that's why the United States has made it very clear, as has the European nations, that we do not want Iran to have nuclear capability. And Iran would have to give that up, and it'd have to be tight in the sense that inspectors could come in with no notice and go to these facilities and inspect them. That hasn't happened yet. Usually they give notice and what happens is, because they know, the Iranians know inspectors are coming, they make sure anything that would incriminate them in the sense of showing that they're enriching uranium beyond 5% into a weapons-grade level of 90%, that is concealed. And there are military facilities as well as other nuclear facilities that they don't let the inspectors in. So I'm not seeing a path to a real treaty, if you will, that will stop this. And what I see happening is, okay, we will probably go another 6 months and probably another 6 months, a total of a year, and it'll be clear to everybody, including the Europeans, including the President and the United States, that we've been played for fools. And then what will happen is they'll go back to the sanctions, and Obama will continue the sanctions until he's no longer president. I don't really think he has the stomach for war with Iran, but it wouldn't take much to start one. And like I said last show, I really think the only option for the United States is covert Central Intelligence Agency actions or operations in Iran to overthrow the current regime, which means supporting the young green revolution in Iran. And that's obviously dangerous for our CIA operatives in Iran, because what we're talking about is spying as well as sabotage as well as taking actions that hopefully will lead to a regime change in Tehran. And I have not seen any indications of that. And just a matter of history, the Central Intelligence Agency overthrew Mossadegh and put in the Shah in the 50s. They did it on the cheap. It was very, very successful, and it lasted until the Shah left the country and was overthrown and Khomeini came in. Now it's time for the mullahs and their so-called supreme leader to be thrown out of office by the people of Iran. We're talking revolution here. We're talking armed revolution, and there will be killing. There will be a civil war. That's what it takes. It's either a civil war or people from the outside, namely Israel, the United States, maybe Saudi Arabia, attacking Iran. Now, it's also clear to me that at some point, and I think we're in the two-year window or less, Israel will take unilateral action. In other words, they don't believe what the Iranians are doing. They think they're just stalling. They probably have facilities that neither the United States or Israel are aware of, and they're probably enriching uranium in it. So Israeli intelligence will take out the stockpile of enriched uranium that exists in Iran, some of it hidden, some of it not, probably take out the heavy water facility nuclear reactor at Iraq, as well as attack Guam and Natanz. That's where the uranium, where they have two uranium enrichment facilities that the United States and Israel are aware of. And they might also damage the uranium mines. But the primary targets will be the enrichment facilities, the research facilities, as well as the heavy water facility or reactor. So that's a lot of targets. It's a lot of missions or sorties to do it. It'll probably take days to do it if you're using just fighter aircraft. And if Israel really feels threatened that the red line, Israel's red line, has been crossed, they might use nuclear weapons. I think there's going to be a natural reluctance to do so. The problem is the distance that the Israeli Air Force fighters have to fly. They have to fly over Iraq into Iran, and it's several of these targets in the middle of Iran. It's quite a distance. And the problem with that, and the problem with U.S. involvement, is what will be Iran's or the regime's reaction? And the risk, and it's a big risk, is the closing of the Arabian Gulf and the Strait of Hormuz. And that would dramatically impact oil prices globally. I don't agree with what the president did. I think he could he should have continued the sanctions and pushed for an agreement that was beneficial to Europe and the United States. Everyone that's looked at this agreement or what's been posted about it comes to the conclusion it seems very one-sided and to the benefit of Iran. Now, maybe this is just I've done this myself, maybe this is just a test to see whether or not Iran will negotiate in good faith. I think the lessons or history is this: dictators or tyrannies do not negotiate in good faith. And that's why on the last show I referred to the Munich Agreement that Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain negotiated with Hitler. It didn't work out well, did it? And I really think that's what we have here. The lessons of Munich apparently have not been learned by President Barack Obama or Secretary of State Kerry. And I think this is a distraction, and I think it's a stall on the Iranians' part, and I also think it is a continuing distraction and stall on the U.S. government's part. And I don't think it ends well, because what's going to happen is Iran will develop a nuclear weapon, will develop their missiles, will weaponize it so it can be carried on a intercontinental missile where they can fire it from Iran and hit Israel, and if they have a longer range missile, even targets in Europe as well as Egypt and Saudi Arabia. In the Arab world, the Persians, the Iranians are viewed as enemies. They're the biggest threat. They're a direct threat to the balance of power. They're a direct threat to Egypt and Saudi Arabia and the other Arab states. And you also have a religious component that I got into a little bit yesterday, that the Arab Muslims are Sunni Muslims. And Sunni Muslims are the majority of the people that practice the Islamic faith. The minority is the Shiites, and that's the Iranians. So we have a religious ethnic conflict. They don't like each other, I guess is the easiest way to say it. And the only thing they really agree about is that they want a Islamic caliphate throughout the Islamic world. I think that's utopian. I really don't think it's going to happen. But the Muslim Brotherhood, as well as other and their allies in the Arab world, want that. I think President Obama is playing with fire. I think he's ill-advised to do this. I'm really somewhat surprised that he entered into this agreement. But the only reason I can see doing it is definitely a big distraction. We're not talking about Obamacare. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit more on Obamacare. As much as I'd rather talk about something else, I've been doing a lot of prep for this show. And it's very, very clear that President Obama has a crisis on his hands that involves himself. It's a crisis of credibility and a crisis of competence. And it centers on Obamacare. And what's going to happen is this. The Democrats will be going home for Thanksgiving. And then we'll be going home shortly for Christmas on the holidays. They're going to go home to their districts, have meeting in their districts. They're going to attend parties and functions. And what they're going to find is the American people are mad. What are they mad about? Most Americans were happy, satisfied with their health insurance plans. And they don't like those relationships mess with. And it involves more than the insurance plan. It involves doctor-patient relationships that have built up over years. Many people have the same family physician, and if they have the need of a specialist, have the same specialist over many years. They develop trusting relationships with their doctors, and many people keep the same insurance plans. That doesn't mean they don't change them in terms of the deductibles. Now, why is that a problem for the administration? You have right now over 180 million people that are being affected by Obamacare, and Obamacare is my shorthand label for the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, that is making all existing plans by regulation illegal, which means you can't continuing offering these plans. Now, I know the president a couple of weeks ago said you could keep them for a year. That doesn't solve it, and B, most of the insurance commissions as well as the Department of Insurance aren't going to allow it. A lot of planning, a lot of effort went in to develop these so-called Obama medal plans, the bronze, the silver, the gold, and the platinum. And what the law did and the regulations did is try to coerce or force by mandate both individuals and employers to change over to a qualified plan that met all the requirements of Obamacare, including certain essential benefits that must be included in all plans. When you combine that with the requirement that anyone that has a pre-existing condition cannot be declined coverage, in other words, all these new plans, the individual as well as the group, are a guaranteed issue. You fill out the paperwork, pay your money, and your health insurance plan is issued to you. Well, because of those two categories of changes, all your plans are going to be more expensive. All the plans will be more expensive. The only ones that will get a break in the price are those that are eligible for subsidies. You see, a lot of what's going on here, ladies and gentlemen, is a massive wealth redistribution. And the amount of subsidies depends on either the individual's or family's income, the size of the family. And it's a sliding scale from the most subsidies, if you're at 100% of the poverty scale, up to 400%. So what that means is if people that are low income, low to middle income, will get some subsidies, that will mean the premium impact is not as great for them. But those premiums have to come from somewhere, and where they're coming from are the people that don't get the subsidies. And everybody's plan is going to be more expensive. It has to be. Now, some of you are probably saying, well, wait a minute, what about the people that have a serious pre-existing condition, such as they have heart attacks or cancer? Yeah, they can going to get a plan, and it's at least in the past they couldn't get. Well, I'm going to have to wrap it up. I started a little late. I'll try to give a full 2-hour show. The point I'm trying to make is what we're going to have throughout next year is all employer-provided plans, especially the small plans, are going to be up for renewal. They can't keep their plan. Their premiums are going to go dramatically up. So every month you'll have probably somewhere between 12 and 13 million people losing their plans, and one of three things are going to happen. The employer will pay for it, or the employer will cancel the insurance and say go to the exchange, or the employee will have to pay more. So for the next year, the American people are going to be quite upset with Obamacare. And that is going to dramatically impact the elections in November 4th, 2014. And the Democrats, I think, are going to be abandoning Barack Obama because they're up for re-election in 2014. Barack Obama isn't. So that's what's going to happen in the next year. I'll give you a little bit more details tomorrow. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We are the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Thank you for listening, and now back to the music.